Welcome back, folks. This is Mark Steiner here on The Mark Steiner Show. On our way to our conversation, this is a very special day. Obviously, it's a day after our election, but it is also a day of reflecting on what happened a year ago. This is the day that Freddie Gray's funeral took place. This is the day that the uprising began. And this is a day that we can kind of think about what this year has meant in terms of this election. Did it affect this election? Does it affect the future? What does it say about where we are and where we're going? Some interesting questions were brought up. I raised a couple of the issues. Jackie Robarge wrote an email in. I'm going to read that again and throw out the stat I threw out earlier about murders in this town as well and see who won this election, what effect it might have had, what people who were active might have had on this election. Before we get to that, I want to remind you, The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ Baltimore's credit union is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or at steinershow.org is MeQ Baltimore Credit Union's banner. So in the studio now with us, we have who are you again? Dr. Kay Whitehead, I'm just messing with you.
Nice to meet you.
And Malika Amanita Clements is in the house. Good to see you.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good.
Good to have you here. Morgan State University print journalism graduate and director of the film Not About a Riot, which she was talking about on this program after she made the film. Good to have you back in the house.
Good to see you.
And Easy Jackson's hanging out for a little bit here as well. And we should be soon joined by Erica Alston. 410-319-8888. So a couple of interesting things happened. So one of the things, let me just start here with this. This is, we've been talking all month long about the consequences of Freddie Gray's dying at the hands of the police, what that meant for Baltimore and what happened in its wake and where we've been over this last year. And so Jackie Robarge wrote this thing, and let me just read her what she wrote in again. And she wrote in, after all we've been through in the past year and seeing the rise of hashtag Black Lives Matter, I am surprised that so few of the winning candidates ran on a racial justice platform. Mm-hmm. Are we committed to change? How committed to change are we? And she just wrote back in, just wondering what is new here. Mm-hmm. So I mean, let's talk a bit about that. I mean, what we think has happened in the consciousness of the people of our community and in the politics, how this may have affected this election or not affected this election since that time. Malika, let me let you start.
I guess when speaking of that comment or just like thinking in general, I think the death of Freddie Gray, it definitely shifted the consciousness of the city. And so once that happens, I feel like the people who aren't necessarily politicians, aren't necessarily in power, they become leaders themselves. So, you know, there's people who have ran, who we look to, but at the same time, I don't think that's as important anymore as just like everyone kind of figuring out what they could do in their neighborhood, what they can do for themselves, what they can do for the people around them, and kind of catalyzing that way.
Do you think it had an effect on this election at all?
I'm sure it did somewhat, but I feel like other people could speak on that more than I can. So okay. If anyone else wants to jump in.
Easy, you've been involved in politics a lot. Erica just walked in. We'll get her settled in here. Welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you.
I know parking is a problem here at Morgan sometimes. We can finally get you in a parking spot. Easy.
I think it definitely had an effect. I mean, as somebody who's been an organizer for most of my adult life, this past year has been the first time I've seen what I have wanted to see for a long time. And that's, you know, and that's everyday people. That's people who previously hadn't been involved in politics, getting engaged, getting involved, either running for office or getting involved in an organization or starting an organization or organizing a rally or organizing some kind of thing, you know what I mean? I think that people saw, I think the world saw that, you know, I remember last year I kept saying Baltimore is not Ferguson. And what I meant by that was that, you know, we at that point had not been a city that was going to continue to just wait for the politicians to tell us what was next or what was going to happen or lay down the law. We are a city that's like very engaged. You know what I mean? I think just in this election, Baltimore City realized that, you know, you got to get out there. Like, you got to vote. You got to do, you know, you got to play a role in politics.
So, Erica, let me just bring you in here. And welcome. Good to have you with us in the studio here. Erica Alston is Director of Business Development for Penn North and Founding Director of the Kids Safe Zone, a leading community activist. We start off by saying this email from Jackie Rabarge, who's Director and Founder of Power Inside. Mm-hmm. Sent an email in saying, after all we've been through in the past year and seeing the rise of Black Lives Matter, I'm surprised that so few of the winning candidates ran on a racial justice platform. How committed to change are we?
And I was listening driving in, and thank you for your input. That's tough. We know that the uprising was a result of decades mm-hmm. of racial tension, mm-hmm. Of a people being ignored, abandoned, forgotten. The reason no one took that stance is because it was politics as usual. There are people who fund. There are companies and corporations that aren't vested in our community as much as the political faces would like to say. So it'd be a very sensitive and difficult stance to take if it was politics as usual. I mean, DeRay didn't even do it. Because it's bigger than our politicians. You just alluded to that. It's about us.
Yeah.
It's about the community in engaging, stepping up, and holding the people elected accountable for our social injustices. Mm-hmm. It's not their responsibility. It's mm-hmm. ours.
So and when you look at what's happened over the last year, I'm just mm-hmm. thinking about the election just happened. One of the things that struck me about in juxtaposing what you just said, Erica, mm-hmm. is that the election says to me, whether it was the election of Van Hollen in the primary, mm-hmm. and or whether we see the battle between Senator Pugh and former Mayor Dixon for mm-hmm. that, and was very close actually, closer than many people thought it would be, that it says to me that most people who vote in elections still are people who vote more or less for the establishment. That the outside vote doesn't always take precedent. That's not where it comes from. At least it doesn't seem to, in this state, have that kind of effect. So, I mean, where does this political process fit into the struggle and movements and different things that have grown out of the death of Freddie Gray?
I think you saw that in the direct number results of people who actually got out and voted. I mean, mm-hmm. one of the things that came up, and you alluded to it earlier, that came up a lot over this past year is the small percentage of people who actually got out and voted mm-hmm. for our former mayor.
Right.
And that people did not want that to happen again.
Right.
I think you saw the direct result in the number of young people who mm-hmm. might have previously not been so actively and politically engaged, who moved from protesting to getting into LBS or Baltimore mm-hmm. Block or the Algebra Project, saying, mm-hmm. what can I do to change what's happening in my community? I think mm-hmm. you saw people drill down a little bit deeper, coming from the mayoral election to what's actually happening in my own district.
Mm-hmm. I think you saw when DeRay announced that he was running, and everybody in Baltimore went, "Who is this dude?"
But you know what? But it also said that there's something happening maybe mm-hmm. on the national level,
yeah.
and people are saying
yep.
in Baltimore City, yes, we have this issue around racial mm-hmm. injustice. We do have yep. that issue, but we also have some other social ills
deep
that we have to deal
yep.
with. Like it is
yep.
around education. It mm-hmm. is around food desert. It is around housing.
Yep.
That yes, racial injustice is a part of that, which when people were very surprised, so why are we not just talking about that? I'm like, well, if you live in Baltimore City, it's not just that.
Right. And racial justice kind of goes without saying
and
in Baltimore City.
It kind of permeates through everything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's like,
absolutely.
Of course.
Yeah.
Malika, you...
No. I'm just, like, digesting everything. But I feel like there's a lot
like you're saying, there's a lot to digest and to kind of uncover. So, you know, there is, you know, the ballots. And I feel like us as people, as citizens of Baltimore, of the state of Maryland, we have to kind of realize that the politicians are supposed to represent us, and not the other way around. So it's like when you do cast your ballot, you're saying that, okay, this is this group of people, and now because we elected you, we are the ones who you're supposed to, you know, kind of cater to.
When I think about this, I'm looking at some of these results, and I'm thinking about Sandtown's what, District 8? Right.
And that tweet you had earlier about more people came out and voted, and perhaps in any other district, right?
Yes. No, in Sandtown, the numbers jumped exponentially.
Absolutely.
Like 250 to almost 1,000 people voted out of Sandtown.
Yes.
That was the and so Elder Harrison come on.
Exactly. Yeah, Elder Harrison.
I work at Jubilee Arts. So Elder Harris was on the roof until he got at least 500 people to vote.
From 21217.
Come down, right?
From the district. Yeah. So that's giving a message like, these are the people who are electing you in office. And if you all didn't have our interests in mind, you need to have our interests in mind.
Because we have power. So politically, I'm curious where you all think that energy and power goes. You know what I'm saying? Where does it go now? I mean, we saw the election. I don't know if... That's why I'm saying not trying to be jaundiced about it, Erica, but the election we had, I don't know how much it spoke to the amount of people coming out was fueled, I think, by what happened in the last year. But how much it changed what happened in this election.
I think we need not care who's in office.
Right.
Okay.
Leading up to this election, before I publicly supported Sheila Dixon, when everyone with a camera or a microphone asked me, who did I like for mayor? My response was, no one.
Right.
I don't care.
I don't care who's mayor.
It's my responsibility, the day that person is in office, from the time that I wake up until the time that I go to bed, to keep that person accountable.
Exactly.
So the numbers of people that showed up to vote in Sandtown, now as a result of the uprising, now as a result of this international stage that we've had, know that we can be seen and heard. We need to show up. We need to be at Board of Estimates meetings. We need to be at City Council meetings. Yep. We need to be at City Hall, not just when the cameras are rolling.
Right.
We need to show up. We need to be pest. We need to bother. We need to call. We need to email. We need to make it known that you ran for office for a position. It's a job. That was a job interview. Yesterday was a job interview.
Yep.
Okay.
Come on,
Agri. You got the job. Now it's our responsibility as your employer to keep you accountable for your job duties and responsibilities.
Right.
And as the mayor, most of those responsibilities are other duties as required.
Yep. And I think Baltimore can be a leader in showing people exactly how that's done.
Absolutely.
I think from now until, November or the next election personally, as somebody who's been on the ground pre-Freddie Gray and pre-uprising and all this stuff, we are very excited to see this kind of energy, and the plans are already in place to engage the people. You know what I mean? To make sure the people know, look, like exactly what Erica was saying, this is, we are the bosses. And I think a lot of communities like Baltimore, cities like Baltimore, or the rest of the country, the rest of the world can learn from this process going forward.
But I think people need to figure out where they have to plug in. I agree with
saying. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yesterday was a job interview. I don't care who's mayor. In so many ways that people were actively engaged yesterday. They've been socially engaged for the past year. I know LBS has been around before then. I know the Algebra Project has been around before then. But they moved into a stage where people who did not formally pay attention had to pay attention. You had to actively engage with this city.
Yep.
And I think now people have to figure out, where do you go with that energy?
Yep.
So you want to hold Catherine Pugh accountable. What does that mean?
Yep.
You need to find a place to fit in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking these organizations have all come out of this. You need to plug in to make your voice known. You can't just stand on the street to make her and hold her accountable. You've got to do something. Hold your city council person accountable means what? It means giving up your time, showing up to meetings, figuring out where you can be an active part. But also realize, if I may just kind of add on to that, that we have to share some of this work. Not just waiting for Catherine Pugh to do it. People were waiting for the mayor to show up and do something. No, you don't have to wait for the mayor to show up. You can actually do it yourself and figuring out how you want it to be done.
And I think that's what Elder Harris showed us in Sandtown in 21217.
Yeah.
I mean, I stood up there on the roof. I went up on the roof with him for a little while and talked with him, you know, about Sandtown and West Baltimore from the beginning to today. And to sit there and be up there with him, it as a younger man, it gave me so much energy because I realized that I don't have to run for office.
Yeah.
I don't have to be the mayor.
Yeah.
I don't have to be a council person to be powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know what I mean?
All
I have to do is plug into my people. Like you said, plug into my neighborhood.
Figure out where you fit
plug
in.
Plug in, find out where you fit in, and get active.
Let me open the phones here, folks. I'm reflecting on this year, since the funeral of Freddie Gray and the beginning of the uprising that took place, the election that took place yesterday, how they may be connected or disconnected, your thoughts on where we are and what this year means, 410-319-8888. I'll throw this thing out now, and then when we come back from these couple of callers, I want to really wrestle with this. I said it in the other program that, as Mark Gunnery, my producer, told me this morning, from April the 26th of 2015 to today, there have been 360 murders in the streets of Baltimore.
Yep.
In this last year, April to April, 360 murders since the death, since Freddie Gray's funeral. That's a stunning number.
Stunning.
That's almost one person a day.
Yep.
360 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And
no turn.
And so that's something I think we have to reflect on. See, it's one thing to what and how we respond to that as a community, and how we force the city to respond to that, and what we do to kind of wrap our hands. That's I keep thinking about that number.
Yeah. Yeah.
360 people have lost their lives on the streets of Baltimore.
Four died last night.
Huh?
Four died last night.
Right.
Yeah. On election.
And several times that number have been shot.
Yep.
Or stabbed. And so it's
of all ages. I mean, you're talking about the young people.
So that's a very – so let me get this phone call in here. We'll come back from break. I really want to kind of reflect on what that means for the movement that's growing in this town. And it's more than just 300 men marching down North Avenue.
Right.
Yeah. Which I think wasn't a bad thing. Symbolically, I think that was important.
There's a lot of symbolism, but we need more than that.
410-319-8888. Let's go to the phones. Bubby, you're on the air. Welcome.
Bubby. Yes, sir. Thank you. As a lifetime resident of Sandtown, Winchester, one of the problems you have in Sandtown, we have a lot of carpetbaggers trying to speak for us. Mm. I like to ask the question. I manned the poll at Gilmore Home, and I watched, and I was so proud of the Sandtown residents to come vote. I watched them one after the other vote for Dixon and Wesley West. And yet still, Pinkett, who won the 7th District, I have never even seen him in Sandtown. And you talk about Elder Harris up on the roof. I was the one at the polls giving the count to try to help get Elder Harris off the roof. The problem we have in Sandtown, people not from Sandtown still trying to speak for the residents of Sandtown. Everybody know who I am. I was the man at the Housing Authority, Sandtown resident. But yet still, none of the carpetbaggers stood up for me against Graziano. Thank you very much.
I would disagree with you, brother. I think that the voices from Sandtown are very loud. I think that, you know, when you talk about people like Ray Kelly and, you know, Elder Harris, like who have been in that neighborhood, those as he calls them, carpetbaggers from outside of Sandtown are taking lead from the folks in Sandtown.
And
would you agree, Malika?
But also all of District 7 is not Sandtown.
Absolutely.
Right, that's true.
From Hamden,
right,
Nashville.
Right.
That's a big circle.
That's a big
district. Without apology, I don't live in Sandtown, but I spend 12 to 14 hours of my day in Sandtown. My work can't be discredited because my zip code is different.
Come on,
I work for an organization that's been in Sandtown for 23 years. That's two decades providing substance abuse and treatment to people that need it most, and most without insurance. 200 people live with us in Sandtown. Their zip codes didn't start in 21217, but because we provide supportive housing to 200 people in Sandtown, it's that divide. It's that Upton, Drude Heights, Sandtown divide and division that's going to perpetuate the problem.
Right. And I think if you care about a place, then it doesn't matter who is the person whose face you're looking at, because you represent the same thing. if you're really trying to, you know, fight systematic poverty and racism and oppression in general, and somebody else is doing that who might have a larger platform, then it's like, okay, support that, because that's the way that we're all going to be on the same page.
410-319-8888. Great comments here. Good panel. A lot of people calling in. Let's get to that. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Stacy on the west side. You're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Good morning.
I'm sorry. Let me turn my radio down. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I had to call because I need to do something with my excitement that I've been dealing with for the last year. So I really had, like, you know, I didn't know what to do after I voted yesterday with myself. But I kind of agree with the first caller a little bit. I do feel like there's a lot of input from outside of West Baltimore saying what's best for West Baltimore, not you all on the panel that's speaking today, not included. And I think that a lot of people that don't have a vote in Baltimore have a lot to say in Baltimore. Every time I'm engaged in a passionate conversation, I find out someone's from Baltimore County or Owens Mills, and they really can't vote for mayor anyway. But I think the fact that we're on the national stage, the fact that we have 8 new city council members, the fact that we're having these discussions about activism in Baltimore on the map. I went to college in 2000 in Florida. No one knew where Baltimore was. We were still saying next. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the fact that not only are we known or on the map, we're also a political pocket that people are paying attention to, I think that's a big difference. But in addition to that, I wouldn't count out Joshua Harris in this next race that's about to happen between Catherine Pugh and all the people that didn't feel like their votes were actually counted and actually voices heard are going to come out in this election. And it's going to be different in Baltimore for this general election, I believe. And the last point I want to make is that when the powers that be change a lot of policy, in addition to the actual procedure and the way that we vote right before an election, I think it's intentional. I think that the electorate in Baltimore, they depend on us being less informed.
Mm-hmm.
I went to the polls with a lot of older people. I vote right off of Poplar Grove Street, and they had no idea how to fill in the bubble. They had no idea who the judges were on the ballot. So they depend on us not having those sample ballots. I take mine with me. I fill in my dots according to my ballot. I'm serious.
Right,
but that's
right.
Because I was raised in a family like that. So I think as we go through this moment of movement and revolution that we're in, because I was in Pete Welch's district, I've only had him and his mom as a council person since I've been alive. And I'm 39 years old. So it's a different time. It's a new day. Regardless of what happens or who gets elected, we're definitely a new Baltimore. Thank you all for taking my call.
Thanks, Stacey, for your thoughts and comments. We're going to take a very short break. We'll come right back. Heather from the West Side, Tim in Reservoir Hill. We're going to get your calls. Marie called in. Leo called in. I bet you know which Leo that is. We'll be right back at 410-319-8888. Stay with us. Welcome back. Your thoughts on this year after the funeral of Freddie Gray and the beginning of the uprising and the election, what effect it has, where are we going as a community, what energy has been brought to the fore because of this. 410-319-8888. We sit here with E.Z. Jackson, Malika Clements, Erica Alston, and Dr. Kay Whitehead. 410-319-8888. Mind if we go right back to the phones here?
Oh, absolutely.
Let's get right in. Let us go to Tim in Reservoir Hill. You're on the air.
All right. Thanks, Mark, for taking my call. I think one of the important things that people need to remember moving forward after this election, even at the local level, is that organizations, elected officials, communities need to make better ties to a network broader than Baltimore City. Although your issues may be local, the uprising may have been local here in our city, and I'm a resident of the West Side. In order to bring the city back and deal with the issues that Baltimore has to deal with, you got to be able to build bridges at the state, federal level, because we need those resources across the city. So to be so focused on just your local issue and just what's going on in the neighborhood, you know, while that may seem effective, in my opinion, it's a lot less effective than being able to do that while you simultaneously build a broader network and tie your issues to other people's issues statewide and the like. So that's just what I want to say.
Tim, thanks so much. Let's get on the call, and then we'll jump back into the commenting on the calls we just heard. 410-319-8888. Tim, thanks for that. Heather on the West Side, you're on the air.
Hi. Am I here?
Yeah, you are, Heather. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I live in the Beachfield area, and when I went to go vote, I did not see a lot of people come out, and it really bothered me because our neighborhood is full of drug dealers, and while the efforts of the police have increased, the presence of the police has increased. They aren't policing. They are just leaving empty cars just alongside Frederick Road and hope that it will deter the criminals in the neighborhood from, you know, distributing their CDS, but it doesn't work. So I kind of thought that it would be a greater turnout because we had so many kids and so many killings and so many car break-ins, but it really wasn't. And I think that was because no one came down to the Beachfield community to actively engage with us about what plans they had for us or how they were going to make living conditions better. And I was just very disappointed that the voter turnout was not great. And I just think that that was in large part due to them campaigning in areas they thought would get them more votes. And I felt like they kind of forgot about us back there. Do you all know what area I'm talking about?
No,
She's talking about West Side off of Frederick Road.
Are you 9th District?
I believe so, yes. I just moved there. I haven't really been there too long, but I voted at that school right there on Frederick Road.
Yeah, Beachfield is between Frederick Road and Emerson.
Right.
And just to piggyback a little bit off what the last caller just said, when I got there, people didn't know how to fill out the ballots. They didn't know who was running. Some candidates they had never even heard of, and they were just voting just to get the sticker, just to say that they were voting. And I feel like if they would have campaigned a little more to the people in that neighborhood, then maybe you would have had a greater turnout. If you would have came out and, you know, introduced yourself to us, let us know what you stood for, we could have got some things done. But our community is really, really bad, and especially up in the cut where Yale Heights is. You know, we don't have police cameras. We don't have foot patrols. We don't have any kind of community policing efforts. We don't have anything. It's just yourself. And you can't report any crimes because the police aren't going to keep you safe if you have to testify.
Heather, I appreciate the call. I mean, Erica, what were you going to say?
It's no longer thank you for the information. And there are thousands of people in the city that feel the same way that you do. But I think what we've been talking about is that it's no longer acceptable to not know what district you're in. It's not acceptable to not know who your delegate is, who your city council person is, because, again, if you have these problems, it's wonderful to call and bring awareness on a radio show, but the people responsible for changing the policy in your area need to know what's going on.
Yeah. Maybe part of that might just because people are so disconnected from the process.
Absolutely. Right.
They don't feel part of the process.
Absolutely. It's about making them a part of the process. Find out who that person is. They've just been voted in. And I think you're in 9th District, and that's Christopher Burnett. You've got a brand new city council person.
Yep.
Brand
and who's new. Who's a community
who's got
organizer.
Something to prove. And he's a community organizer who's vested in the community. So
but aren't those two separate things? Not knowing who your city council person is and not knowing what district you live in. Like, okay, you don't know the city council person. We could talk about that. But you need to know what district you live in.
But people keep saying that. But the reality is that almost everybody I know, whether you live in the suburbs or the city, whether you're white, black, Asian, Latino, whoever you are, doesn't know what district they're in.
They don't.
People don't know what district they're in.
You got to recognize that. You got to recognize
what we as those who know
have to recognize, and what we have to challenge ourselves to do is explain and make sure people know that it's by design.
You know
where your supermarket is because the supermarket wants to sell you the food that they're selling.
You need it, and you need the food.
You don't automatically know what your district is or who your council person is.
But that's not acceptable.
The information is not available because they don't want you to know that.
Malika, let me bring you in. Come back to the conversation here because I want to switch gears here, but I want you to respond to what you've just been listening to because the people around this panel right now. I know you've been inside the movement. You've been in the streets a lot. And I don't think you strike me as one of those people from our conversations not in the middle of the Democratic Party process. That's not your thing, right? So when you hear this, what do you think?
I mean, I think it has its place, for sure. But it's not the only way. So, you know, the person who just called in was saying how, you know, if people would vote in this district, and then who are we going to talk to, the police? Just things like that. I feel like it's more important to figure out what you can do. Mm-hmm. So if you have people, you know, who are dealing drugs in your neighborhood, like, have you ever engaged with them and talked to them and been like, you know, like, this isn't the best? I mean, people know these things too, but I feel like those direct actions, just everyday interactions and building community, building relationships with people who are criminals. I'm doing the parentheses,
right?
You know,
right.
I feel like that's a lot more effective than trying to figure out who your city council representative, just in like instantaneous kind of, yeah.
No.
When
you look at things like what happened when people seized the house and created Tubman House in 1619, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The negotiations that Eddie Conway and others did with young guys in the neighborhood mm-hmm. was that the young guys called a truce in mm-hmm. that area yep. so that Tubman House could be safe.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
That's an inroad into talking to the young people on the corner.
The same things that Penrose right? said. Hey, yeah. guys, can you not sell drugs mm-hmm. on the playground no. between 4 and 6 when the kids come out?
Make it a safe space. Absolutely. Make it a safe space.
I hosted an event at the Bandshell in Clifton Park during Light City, and Stoop Storytellers had folks from the Montebello community come and like tell their stories.
Yeah.
And we had two homeowners talk about how they move drug dealers from in front of their house and off their corner. So Malika's absolutely right. Those, you know, those are like immediate steps that you personally can take in your own community to just and it is scary. It is a scary thing to do, but in reality, you know, these young guys, like, they do have some kind of moral compass. You know what I mean? I always say Baltimore is a city of pit bulls. You know, if you ever spend time with a pit bull, you know, when you show fear and you act like you're scared of the pit bull, then they run up on you more and they mess with you more. But when you get in, you play with them, you let them know, look, I love you, but you cannot poop on my floor.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, then they're like, all right, cool, I won't poop on the floor.
And then it's also, what are the other opportunities that they have? Or what opportunities are you creating yourself? Right. Or how mm-hmm. can you right. bring other opportunities into the neighborhood, into the people around you, so they don't have to take that route in the first place? Because that's why people do it. I don't think.
But if I don't have anything more attractive to offer a drug right. dealer, and right. I'm not going to buy his kid diapers, I'm not right. going to pay his rent.
Right.
I'm not going to tell him to stop selling drugs. I don't have anything more attractive.
So that's
yeah,
my
but
thing.
Just don't how do it in front of our house.
But then it's like bringing those resources in, because we all have connections somewhere. You know, like, we all know somebody who has a store who might need somebody who's a minimum wage, but at the same time is better than the possibility of your life ending.
So how did we address the fact that
more complicated?
I'm sorry.
I was going to say it's just a lot more complicated than that. Just saying that everybody knows somebody who can give them an opportunity. I think it's a lot more complicated when you think about the lack of choices that some people have in this city. It's not sure. just, do I know someone who has a store and they can give me a job? No. Do I know someone at this point that can take the goods off my hands so I can get food into my home, shoes on the feet of my kids? I think Nikki Giovanni made a very good point. She said, if everybody has a bike, why should my kid have to run beside them to keep up? I want a bike for my kid. I'm willing to do whatever I can to get a bike for my kid because I want to open that door for him. And I also just want to add just why I said it was not acceptable anymore, because I did make that point earlier about not knowing your district. Because if you voted yesterday, just yesterday, when you went in, if you're in District 7, you did not vote for District 9. You did not vote for District 1. Like, you could have found out just by looking at the ballot. So if you didn't vote, okay, we can talk about that. But I'm thinking the day after the election, to say, you know, you're not really sure where you are, that's why I said it's not acceptable. It was on the ballot if you mm-hmm. voted. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to come back to this piece before we hit the phone, too. We only have like 10 minutes left in the conversation. I'm going to get to Leo and Maria if we can, on the who called in. But what I raised earlier about 360 murders in the city of Baltimore in the year from April 26th to now. So, I mean, we sometimes kind of don't get into – when I first started on the air here, this was one of the biggest conversations we used to have on the program with people in the community, just worried about where this was going and how to take control. And this is a very real issue. So How do we get control of this issue? I mean, what is it? You've got these new people elected to office. You've got this new commissioner saying he's going to want to do things differently, but it's beyond the police. So where do you take the conversation?
I think part of it is definitely in improving. I think part of it, not the whole thing, but I think a big part of it is improving the community and police relationship in this city, because I think. And just personally from the schools that I had to go to and just moving around the city in the past year, post-uprising, a lot of precincts, a lot of police officers, a lot of areas, they decided not to police. Because, you know, and the talk was when you talk to police officers, oh, we can't do our jobs now. We can't do our jobs now because the people don't want us to. And, you know, and all this behind Freddie Gray. So I think that had a lot to do with the spike in murders, because you had people who are hired to police and hired to protect and serve that now we're not doing that job.
But I think it's beyond the police.
For sure. Like I said at the beginning, I said a part of it.
Our murders are a direct result of our deeply embedded issues. Mm-hmm. Our murder rate is a true reflection of how we feel about ourselves.
Exactly.
When no one's watching. It's easy for a brown boy to kill another brown boy. If I am not worthy, I'm not valuable, no one loves, appreciates, there's no opportunity, there are no resources. If I have none of these things and you look just like me, it's easy. I'm not condoning the violence, but I understand how it happens. Back to not being opportunity, back to there not being resources. I took a 16-year-old boy up to the mall a couple of days ago, and riding back, Gilmer Holmes, in the middle of the day, there were African-American men from 18 to 40 out. Like, it was a weekend. It was work hours. It was school hours. It was do something productive hours. And they were out on the street. And if I see that, people with resources see that. It is bigger than I know somebody that can give one of them a job as a clerk in a grocery store. It is the underemployment. This violence, the death and the murder rate is a direct result of the issues that are not being addressed.
Right. I agree, too. It is a lot bigger than that. And to me, I think it comes down to, you know, like, again, opportunities and resources and positive outlets. Like, what positive outlets do people have to show how they're feeling, and these outlets, how can they be productive as well? So how are they able to make a living? 'Cause I feel like a lot of it also has to do with, you know, like, you shoot my cousin, it's retaliation. A lot of it, when you're in a space that's small and things like that are happening all the time, mm-hmm. then you're going to be upset about it. And if you don't value someone else's life because they never valued yours, that's just kind of what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. But I do think everyone has different connections. And because of where Baltimore is now and people are looking at it and like, how can we help Baltimore or what's going on here? The people who have been given this national attention, it's their responsibility or all of our responsibilities to then navigate, okay, I can now give these person this opportunity or share their stories, and then that helps. And it's, you know, sometimes we only can help a couple people at a time. Like, personally, I mean, I'm saying I can personally help a couple people, so I can take two people under my wing. But then if everyone does that,
I think we go
to Cave.
No, I guess I want to make 2 points, and I'll just move it on, because when you first asked the question, I actually did just take my glasses off and rub my eyes. I'm from Washington, D.C. When I was growing up, it was the myrtle capital of the world. Mm-hmm. And that the idea that we would have meeting after meeting, what can we do to bring down the murder rate? Well, that's if we open a community center. Well, if we give people a job, that will change everything without dealing with the underlying system of systemic racism and systemic classism in this country. That the problem that we have with a 14-year-old on the street corner didn't start yesterday. Right. We need to go back to where's the breakdown. The breakdown is happening way back in first grade when you have kids being educated at different levels. So opportunities begin to close off to you as early as that point. Why do we have so many 16-year-old boys dropping out of school here in Baltimore City? Even though people are putting resources in place, even though people are trying to get folks jobs, it's just so much more complicated than that. And if you get down and you get on the ground and you're talking about how can I help you, it's not as if you can come up with an answer. Oh, if you just give me a job, things will change. Because we do have people who are working every day who are still living below the poverty line.
Mm-hmm. But you have to be a mentor. Like, it's more than a job. It's being there for that person, having them give you their phone number and you have their phone number, so whenever they're going through something, they can call you. So it's those close-knit relationships that I feel really make a difference.
Well, I've just been doing that with the Douglas kids, you know, trying to be a mentor. There were a number of kids in that room, and I sat there and said, okay, so now, how can I help everyone? How many mentors do we need? But I look at Douglas High School as a place where kids are going to Cuba. There are kids that are going to college. But within that school, there are some kids who've completely checked out. And I am not saying W.E.B. Du Bois and the talented temp theory. I'm saying trying to figure out how we can pull this layer back one piece at a time to figure out how we can make some significant, substantial changes.
But one of the things, let me go up on the phone to get some closing thoughts from everybody around the room, because I think that one of the things is the political push is for massive intervention.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, it's like, we can have a Marshall Plan after World War II. The inner cities of our nation need a Marshall Plan now. I mean that's a political move. But let me open the phones real quick thoughts. Lionel, you're on the air, line two. Hi, Lionel, you there?
Yes, sir. Hello.
Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I've been listening. It's been a great conversation. Just a little bit about me. I'm not from Baltimore. I'm actually from Buffalo, New York. I am in Baltimore, though. I have lived here in the past. I just graduated with a PhD in criminology, so I know a little bit about the topic, especially in terms of urban areas. I think everybody's right, you know, partially. I think one of the big things that does not get talked about is mental illness, especially among the poor, among people who have experienced and witnessed violence from probably birth to childhood to young adulthood, where violence becomes normal, right? That's how conflicts get resolved, both in the home, in the street. You know, there is, you know, where police comes in is, yes, police community relations, but people don't trust the police to solve their problems at that moment, right? Drug dealers have issues. They're not calling the police because they got robbed of $3,000 last night, right? So we talk about jobs and things like that. It's the fact that violence becomes so normal in so many communities. People are desensitized to it.
Well, I know.
So I think that's a very big point that needs to be talked about in that conversation.
Well, no, write to us more. I'd like to hear more of your thoughts. I mean, it's like, hear more of what you're thinking. I think that's great. At marcusteinershow.org. Let's get some closing ideas here before we turn to the city paper about where we are a year later and just close out.
I think very, very quickly that one of the things that I was just looking at Reverend Heber Brown's Facebook page saying that, you know, not wanting to reflect too quickly, not wanting to romanticize too quickly about the Baltimore uprising and remembering the time of fear. I mean, I was deeply afraid last year, afraid not just for my own life, but deeply afraid for the lives of the two black boys I'm raising here, my boys in this city. And I wonder what is it going to take to have some real change? Yes, being afraid of the police on one side, but 360 murders on the other hand, saying where can we keep our boys in particular, because that's what I focus on, safe in the city. How can we help them to dream out loud? So I'm excited, but I'm also a bit cautious because I've seen cities like D.C., for example, you get very excited and you fall back down. Stay involved.
We have like 2 minutes left. Malika.
Yeah, I think everyone has a different role. And I feel like it's just a matter of keep on going. Like whatever you feel your role is in how you can make a positive change, it's just important to keep on doing that. Because, you know, it's a year really isn't that much time when you think about it. Right. So, yeah, just kind of building off of where we are.
I think to Heber's point is it's 365 days. And to expect some great grand change it would be unrealistic. Yeah. So nothing has changed in that community. That's the truth. nothing has changed.
Right.
There's still no jobs. There's still no affordable housing. There are still women turning sexual favors for heat and hot water.
Yes.
They are still undereducated. They are still going to schools where 90 days into the school year, there wasn't a principal. They opened a library in an elementary school in Sandtown that didn't have books. That did not change. What has changed is our lens. And our meaning, the people there who see every day what needs to be changed and our responsibility to it. I believe that we now know that we don't have to wait for the perfect space, the perfect check, the perfect support. So if it needs to be done, it's up to us to do it.
And we have to cut out now. But
Mos Def opens his album Black on Both Sides, saying, you know, people always come up to me, ask me, where's hip hop going? You know, and I answer that question going, well, where am I going? What am I doing? And I think that's the same thing we all have to ask ourselves in Baltimore. Where's Baltimore going? What's going on in Baltimore? Well, what am I doing? What's the issues? Well, what am I doing about it? Who am I in my perspective, place, and space?
So we felt City Paper was jumping on, but they haven't called back just yet. So as soon as they do, we'll have them on. But this has been a really important discussion to have. Well, she's there now, so I'm going to thank you all for being part of this discussion.
Thank you.
And just one last thought in the election I want to throw out for as we go to City Paper. Just think about the third largest vote getter was somebody who did not win in this city. I think she was the third largest vote getter in the city. That was Kim Trueheart.
Mm-hmm.
No money,
yeah.
No
Bravo.
Campaign,
mm-hmm.
not able to really stand.
Yep.
Would not be debated against.
Yep.
Yet she came up with 34,000
yep.
votes
yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
in this town, which I thought that was something
snapping
remarkable.
Snapping my fingers right now.
And that says to me something about Freddie Gray.
Mm-hmm.
Movements
mm-hmm.
and desire for change, even if it's a minority of voters,
yep.
yeah.
it's still significant. So
it's an exciting time.
Just want to throw that out there. Thank you all so much. It was great to have you all in the studio here. Dr. Kate Whitehead is always my good friend and partner here. Malika Clemens, great. Always good to have you back in the studio. Erica Olson and Issa Jackson, thank you so much. And
thank you
all really for the work that you do. It's incredibly important work.
Thank you, Mike.